From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the latest on the Ebola outbreak. The Gaza conflict ceasefire might get extended. Plight of the Iraqi Yazidis. Plus, what's going on between the orbits of Jupiter and Mars? Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. The Ebola outbreak showed new signs of spreading in Nigeria on Wednesday. The country's second confirmed victim of Ebola was announced. Heather Murdoch reporting now from Abuja. Nigeria also confirmed five more people have contracted the disease.
Officials say a nurse who treated Nigeria's first Ebola patient 2 weeks ago died Tuesday of the disease. The five other patients are now in isolation at a hospital in Lagos. They're all health workers that treated Patrick Sawyer, a Liberian-American who flew into Nigeria from Liberia with the disease and died on July 25th. Nigerian Minister of Health Onabuchi Chukwu says the government is establishing a 24-hour-a-day Ebola command center and trying to prepare hospitals around the country in case the disease continues to spread.
Beyond Lagos State, we need to work with East State government to establish isolation wards in readiness for any eventuality. We'll strengthen the one of Lagos State working with the Lagos State government, provide even additional space, even in Lagos.
Ebola has killed nearly 900 people this year in West Africa in an outbreak Doctors Without Borders has called unprecedented and absolutely out of control. Outside the two in Nigeria, all of the deaths have occurred in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Health officials have warned the public to avoid direct contact with the blood or bodily fluids of Ebola patients. But their efforts have been hampered by a widespread distrust of doctors and hospitals and an insistence on traditional hands-on burial methods, all of which allow the Ebola virus to spread. The nurse that died yesterday was previously reported to have been a doctor. She is the first known Nigerian to have died from Ebola. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
In Liberia, Wednesday marked the start of 3 days of fasting and prayer decreed by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf as that country tries to contain an outbreak of Ebola that's affected eight of its 15 counties, including the capital. VOA West Africa correspondent Ann Look has the story.
May God help them. That was President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's message to the nation Tuesday night.
I call on all Liberians to observe 3 days of national fast and prayer, to seek God's face, to have mercy on us, and forgive our sins, and heal our land.
The pronouncement has gotten mixed reactions in the capital, Monrovia, with some saying it shows just how desperate the situation has become, while others told VOA it's an important step to keep people calm and unified. And look, VOA News, Dakar.
Health ministers from the Southern Africa Development Community on Wednesday agreed that a coordinated effort in the entire region was necessary in order to contain and stop the spread of the Ebola virus. At an emergency meeting of the health ministers, also attended by officials from the World Health Organization and the SADC Secretariat, they agreed on a strategy for responding to further outbreaks. The outbreak is the world's deadliest to date and is centered in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, with cases also reported in Nigeria. Dr. Francis Kasolo is with the WHO's regional office and attended the Wednesday meeting in Johannesburg, South Africa.
There is recognition that there is a hotspot between the border of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, where intense transmission of the virus is taking place. And most of the cases that have gone out of this particular intense area of transmission, that have occurred in the three countries, have come from this intense area of transmission. So one of the things that was decided was to place these areas under closer scrutiny in terms of limiting travel into and out of those particular areas.
As the Ebola outbreak continues to spread in Sierra Leone, humanitarian agencies such as the International Rescue Committee, the IRC, work to contain the disease and educate communities about how to prevent contamination. IRC Country Director Safia Sensesi says Ebola is spreading faster than efforts to contain it. He also said there is an urgent need for technical resources in addition to financial resources. Sensesi spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis about the IRC's efforts to contain Ebola and the urgent need for resources.
The geographic spread of the outbreak in Sierra Leone is so vast. We now have it in 12 of the 14 chiefdoms. That means that the financial and technical resources that are required to contain the outbreak are huge. If all stakeholders, including the government, had invested 6 weeks ago, less money would have been required now. The challenge, however, now is to contain the disease, rely on significant financial investment to contain the disease in Kenema and Kailang, and prevent what's happening in these two districts from happening in the other 10 districts of the country where there have been positive cases. For this to happen, there needs to be the required resources, financial and material. There needs to be strengthening of coordination between different organizations and delegate responsibilities between the international technical staff, non-governmental organizations, and the Ministry of Health. Quality clinical case management is the cornerstone of Ebola control. International technical support can be given for quality clinical case management, but there is also a need for Sierra Leonean clinical staff, doctors and nurses to be part of this.
Are people afraid to seek treatment and testing at health facilities?
We are observing significant drops in utilization of health services. People are scared to go to health facilities because they are both worried about getting Ebola from health workers and also because of the many fears and rumors that health workers are injecting people with Ebola. Health workers are also being stigmatized and some are labeled as Ebola nurses, hence the urgent need to meaningfully engage community members to try and restore confidence in the healthcare system. This will be difficult and will take time, but with all hands on deck, it is doable.
So what is the procedure when someone comes in and they are suspected of having the Ebola virus?
The procedure is they will be received by a health worker that will refer them to the appropriate technical laboratory technicians to do the testing. And with the testing also goes, you know, some counseling, and then, you know, they will be isolated in the observation ward.
Those people that do die from the Ebola virus, are the necessary precautions being taken in properly burying the body?
Definitely, yes, because the body is extremely contagious. So you actually have specialized burial team that disinfects the body, prepares the body for safe burial.
How many cases of Ebola are there right now in Sierra Leone?
According to MOH figures, total suspected cases to date is 505, and total confirmed cumulative deaths is 253. This is according to the Ministry of Health figures received as of the 5th of August.
Are there any travel restrictions at this time going into Sierra Leone and coming out of Sierra Leone?
No travel restrictions, but mechanisms have been put in place at the airport to screen passengers that are leaving and coming into the country.
IRC Safia Sensesi speaking from Freetown, Sierra Leone, with VOA's Kim Lewis. Here in Washington on Wednesday, President Obama acknowledged the ongoing Ebola crisis and said the U.S. stands ready to offer assistance. He spoke at a summit of African leaders.
On behalf of all of us here today, our thoughts and prayers are those who've been affected by the Ebola outbreak, especially those who've lost loved ones. You know, the United States and our international partners will continue to do whatever we can to help our African partners respond to this crisis and to stand with the people of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone.
President Obama's comments came as concerns over the spread of the deadly virus hit the United States. One patient at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City is currently undergoing tests after arriving at the hospital with symptoms similar to Ebola. Staff at New York University's Medical Center were taking precautions to ensure any potential cases are isolated. Dr. Michael Phillips runs the facility's Epidemiology and Infection Control Unit.
This outbreak of Ebola is remarkable. If you think that a third of all the cases in this, you know, last couple weeks represents, the cases in the last couple weeks represents a third of all the Ebola cases ever reported, it's dramatic. It's a big spike.
Dr. Phillips said that they have special rooms and isolation units for people who might have Ebola. He said there is a specific procedure for patients in this situation.
They come in and they ask whether they're having fever to start, and then there are questions as to where they've been over the last period of time to give us an idea whether this is a patient that could potentially have Ebola.
And precautions are also taking place across the country, such as at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas. Dr. Paul Pepe, emergency medicine chief at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center there, said they have trained persons both nationally and internationally for circumstances like these.
And part of the training that we developed here was for these viral hemorrhagic fevers, such as Ebola. So we've actually trained well over 100,000 people, I think, nationally and internationally, in how to prepare for these things and what to do and how to recognize it.
And the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention also closely monitoring the situation. So far, two Americans who have been infected with Ebola, despite taking precautions as they are treated Ebola patients in West Africa, both are being treated themselves at the Emory University Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia, and are said to be improving.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays on the Voice of America.
Israel says it wants to extend the 72-hour truce with Hamas militants in Gaza as talks on a long-term ceasefire continue in Cairo. Truce is set to expire Friday morning local time. Israel did not say how long it's willing to extend it, but a Hamas official in Cairo said there is no agreement yet. Meantime, there is a sense of uncertainty on both sides of the border between Israel and Gaza as civilians face the daunting task of trying to rebuild their lives. Robert Berger reporting from the VOA Bureau in Jerusalem.
Thousands of Palestinians who fled for safer ground in Gaza are now returning home, only to find that there are no homes to return to. I could not recognize my house, said this Palestinian, standing on a pile of rubble. I cannot believe my eyes, he said. I am shocked. The United Nations says about 60,000 Palestinians have lost their homes in Gaza. Infrastructure such as electricity, running water, and sewage treatment have been severely damaged. It will take years to rebuild at an estimated cost of at least $6 billion. Senior Red Cross official Jacques de Mayo visited Gaza and warned of a dire humanitarian crisis. He spoke on Israel Radio.
One has to see that the people are traumatized. They are shell-shocked. What jumps to the eyes immediately is the infrastructural destruction. We have been in areas which have been simply flattened down, and it's a breakdown of hope.
On the Israeli side of the border, residents may have homes to return to, but many are afraid to go back. The biggest fear is that heavily armed Palestinian gunmen could tunnel into their communities and carry out a massacre or take hostages. Noah Cooperstein is a 16-year-old Israeli from a farming community on the Gaza frontier.
The thought that there is people under my house or close to my house digging, and maybe they will just come out one day and kill me or kill my family. It's scary.
The Israeli army says it has destroyed all the Hamas tunnels it knows about, some 30 in all. But it is the tunnels the army may not know about that have people worried and scared. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
UN Secretary General has welcomed the 72-hour ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, but he says it's come at a price that's almost too much to bear. We get more now from VOA's Margaret Bashir at the UN in New York.
Arab nations called for an urgent meeting of the UN General Assembly to discuss the situation in Gaza, where the UN says more than 1,800 Palestinians have been killed and some 450,000 displaced in 4 weeks of military action between the Israeli army and Hamas militants. Ban Ki-moon told member states that only a negotiated political settlement can bring security and peace to both sides.
Do we have to continue like this? Build, destroy, and build and destroy. We will build again, but this must be the last time. to rebuild. This must stop now. They must go back to negotiating table.
Mr. Bon also reiterated his anger over the deadly shellings of UN facilities in Gaza that housed fleeing civilians, saying the UN flag must be respected and assure protection to those in need.
UN shelters must be safe zones, not combat zones. Those who violate this sacred trust must be subject to accountability and justice. In the most recent case of shelling on a UN facility, the Israelis were informed of the coordinates 33 times.
11 UN staff have been killed in Gaza during the conflict, and the Secretary General said they would be honored Thursday with UN flags lowered to half staff. Senior UN officials briefed the General Assembly on the worsening humanitarian situation in Gaza, where they said the public health system is on the verge of collapse. Water, power, and sanitation systems have sustained serious damage, and thousands of Palestinians are in need of food and other basic supplies. The UN has appealed for $367 million to meet immediate needs. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The United Nations Security Council is warning the Islamic State extremist group may be held accountable for crimes against humanity for its systematic persecution of minorities in Iraq. Security Council said the group poses a threat not only to Syria and Iraq, but to regional peace as well as security and stability. It expressed deep concern for the hundreds of thousands of displaced people, many from vulnerable minority communities. Security Council singled out the Yazidis, who have lived in the area for hundreds of years. The Islamic State issued an ultimatum to tens of thousands of people from the Yazidi community to convert to Islam and pay a religious fine or face death. Instead, many of the Yazidis who follow an ancient religion with links to Zoroastrianism fled to the mountains where they have no access to food or water. Abu Shaker is one of the displaced Iraqi Yazidis.
I received a call an hour ago from a relative there. They are walking away and leaving the dead children behind.
UN says as many as 25,000 Yazidi children are now homeless. And against the backdrop of all of this, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, clinging to power, warns against any attempt to form a new government.
Any break in the constitution will open the gates of hell on Iraq.
Political deadlock in Iraq has existed since an inconclusive election back in April. Observers say it has paralyzed Baghdad's efforts to fight against the Islamic State rebels.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
President Obama and African leaders held talks on expanding trade, improving security, and strengthening government accountability across Africa. Talks at a series of forums Wednesday are a highlight of a massive three-day summit in Washington involving some 50 African heads of state and government. In opening remarks Wednesday, Mr. Obama said a new Africa is emerging.
With some of the world's fastest-growing economies, a growing middle class, and the youngest and fastest growing population on Earth, Africa will help shape the world as never before.
Mr. Obama also said increased business opportunities in Africa could help transform the relationship between the U.S. and the African continent.
It's time for a new model of partnership between America and Africa, a partnership of equals that focuses on African capacity to solve problems and on Africa's capacity to grow.
Earlier, President Obama announced $33 billion in U.S. private and public investment in various African countries. Speaking at the U.S. Africa Business Forum, he said the investment and financing commitments will support both African and American jobs. The bulk of the commitments will come from private sector companies like Coca-Cola and IBM. Also in the news, Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte has recalled investigators probing the shoot-down of a Malaysian airliner in eastern Ukraine, saying fighting near the crash site makes it too dangerous to continue. Mr. Rutte, speaking Wednesday in The Hague, gave no timetable for resuming the hunt for human remains. He said only that the search would resume when Ukraine is more stable. Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 with 298 people on board was downed July 17th near Ukraine's rebel stronghold city of Donetsk. Most of the victims of the Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur flight were Dutch. There were no survivors. Authorities say 228 coffins with remains have so far returned to the Netherlands. Meanwhile, fighting between Ukrainian troops and pro-Russian separatists raged on Wednesday near the Russian border as NATO warned that the Kremlin could intervene with Russian combat troops under the guise of a peacekeeping operation. Rosetta made history on Wednesday, becoming the first space probe to orbit a comet as part of a larger mission to unlock secrets of the solar system's history. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
This is a proud moment for the Paris-based European Space Agency. After a 10-year, 6 billion-kilometer chase, its Rosetta orbiter finally caught up with Comet 67P between the orbits of Jupiter and Mars. ESA images show the probe heading toward a massive rock spinning in the starry darkness. For recently retired mission manager Gerhard Schwiem, reached by phone from ESA's operations center in Germany, Rosetta's rendezvous on Wednesday is not only a first in space history, but a career milestone.
For me, it's a great day. I've been working on this cometary cornerstone, as it's in the agency called in the program, since 85. The span of my professional career, so it's quite great that I started with something that is now basically accomplished.
Or at least the first phase is accomplished, because the biggest challenge lies ahead. In November, Rosetta's team hopes to put the probe's lander on the comet, an extremely delicate and complex operation. The ultimate goal, to dig back in time, a sort of space archaeology, to the very origins of our solar system.
Comets are not only fascinating objects when we see a comet in the sky, when it's bright enough and we see the tail in the night sky, but comets for us are very, very important because they can contain the material that has been preserved like in a deep freeze since the planets and the sun formed 4.6 billion years ago.
With the probe now orbiting around 67P, Rosetta's scientists will begin mapping the comet's surface with a range of instruments. They'll be studying the composition of gas coming out as the comet draws closer to the sun. If it touches down successfully, the lander will analyze the material below the comet's surface, along with its swing from cold to hot as it rushes towards the sun. The Rosetta mission is officially expected to wrap up by the end of 2015, but Schwiem says the probe has saved a lot of energy. At one point, controllers put it into hibernation for 31 months.
So my prediction is stay tuned, and till mid of 2016, you will get a lot of new information about the comet, and then derive from this new insight in how our solar system formed.
The U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA, also contributed experts and instruments to Europe's Rosetta mission. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Electronic rivals Apple, Samsung have agreed to drop all patent disputes between each other outside of the United States. The agreement ends a bitterly fought dispute in a number of countries, but will not affect the ongoing litigation in the U.S., where analysts say both technology giants stand to win or lose. Well, the legal battles began back in 2011 when Africa-based Apple accused South Korean-based Samsung of copying technology used in the trend-setting iPhone. Soon after, Samsung filed its own lawsuits against Apple, accusing it of stealing its mobile designs. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you with us. A reminder, if you happen to find yourself on Twitter and want to talk about the news, you can find me there at VOA Norman. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Kelvin Fowler, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Thursday.
This is Today in History. On August 7th, 1998, simultaneous bombings leveled the U.S. embassies in Nairobi, Kenya, and Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. The attacks killed at least 220 people. Four local members of the Al-Qaeda terrorist network were eventually arrested, tried in a U.S. court, and sentenced to life in prison for the bombings. On this date in 1903, American Ralph Bunche was born. A UN diplomat, Bunche served as chief mediator in negotiations that led to the end of the Arab-Israeli War in 1949. For his efforts, Bunche was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1950, becoming the first person of color to be so honored. On this day in 1964, the U.S. Congress overwhelmingly approved the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, giving President Lyndon Johnson authority to expand U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. Late on this day in 2008, Georgian troops launched a military offensive against South Ossetia in an attempt to reclaim the territory from Russia, thus beginning the 2008 South Ossetia War. On this day in 1971, the Bee Gees scored their first number one hit on the American pop music charts with this single.
I can think of younger days where living for my life was everything a man could want to do.
Brothers Barry, Robin, and Maurice Gibb would go on to produce 11 number one hits on U.S. charts and sell nearly 200 million records worldwide, making them one of the best-selling musical acts of all time. I'm Dave DeForest with Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Freedom of religion is central to our national identity as Americans and a core objective of U.S. foreign policy. The right to believe in a religious creed or not, without fear of government interference, is essential to human dignity, robust civil society, and sustainable democracy. To promote these principles, every year our government compiles a report on the status of religious liberty around the world. It documents the actions of both governments that repress spiritual expression by their citizens and those that respect it. In its most recent findings, the U.S. State Department found that religious intolerance is on the rise in many nations, with interreligious and sectarian violence displacing millions of people and devastating communities. Government officials worldwide often act with impunity while violating the religious rights of their countrymen. Religious freedom is also impinged by the introduction of new restrictions, such as laws against perceived blasphemy and apostasy against mainstream faith. As in previous years, the government of Eritrea's record on religious freedom remains extremely poor, and the U.S. government has redesignated Eritrea as a country of particular concern because of severe violations of religious liberty there. Authorities continued to detain members of unregistered religious groups. That has been fueled by an increase in arrests of persons who refuse to participate in the new citizen militia program, as well as arrests of those who refuse to participate in the country's national service program on religious grounds. Other individuals have been harassed and detained for exercising their right to religious freedom, and there have been reports of forced recantations while imprisoned. Released prisoners report harsh detention and life-threatening conditions, including solitary confinement. Three persons detained for religious objections to military service reportedly died in custody during 2013. Religious freedom is a universal value. The freedom to profess and practice one's faith, to believe or not believe, or to change one's beliefs, is a birthright of every human being. Our nation will continue to shine a spotlight on violations of religious freedom in Eritrea and around the world, and will continue to promote this universal right as a moral and strategic imperative.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.